Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Alrighty, buddy. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, still live from the Hinman Dental Meeting in Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm still waiting.
I need a cold beer. Where's my team supposed to be bringing us cold beer? So hopefully we'll have something to partake in a little bit. My good buddy, by the way, hey, Dental Hacks Nation, we're also with them. We wanted to talk about our Tyler. Ty, introduce yourself, and we're going to jump off to the races here.
All right. I'm Tyler Hamilton.
I'm going to turn a little bit here.
Yeah, I know. Tyler Hamilton, 2015, University of Tennessee Health Science Center with this guy right here. For the last 2.5, I guess almost 3 years now, I've been in the same practice since graduation.
I just want to jump into your journey.
Sure.
Because really, a lot of the listeners, a lot of people watching right now, it's all about a journey. It's all about a story. It's graduating dental school, trying to figure out what to do. And here you are, an owner. You have no family, none of that. Not even 3 years from dental school. Let's hear the path.
All right. So the dental school actually sent me on a trip to Bulgaria. And my wife was like, when are you going to figure out we're going to work? I promised her when I got back, I'd make a list. I made a short list of names. She wanted to end up Nashville or East. So I was like, you know, I'll see what I can do. So I started in our hometown because we're both from the same hometown, Morristown, Tennessee. Both graduated, grew up from birth in that town. So I started my short list there. And as I got to going, it's just like, that made sense. We want to start a family. We want to be close to family. We want to have grandparent experience for our kids. I didn't really have that much.
I think that's a very millennial thing, actually, is that we kind of dictate where we want to go based off where we
want
to go.
Or what you want in life.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Which I think is a great thing,
sure.
Honestly, because our priorities tend to be a little different. So anywho, we put a big emphasis on family.
That's sure. Right. Yeah. So anyway, I made a short list. Had a couple of guys I wanted to go in. One guy I called that I had shadowed with before dental school sold the day I called. Literally
wow.
Sold to a dentist.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I was crushed. I was just, it was like the end of the world, you know. But so then my mom's a hygienist. She's been a hygienist for over 35 years, and the dentist she works for wanted me to come in as an associate.
Okay.
Didn't work out. It just was just not the right timing.
You didn't actually go in as an associate.
This never went in as an associate. This was all in my mind in dental school where I might end up. The last person that I was on my list was actually someone that my mom had referred to me who might be getting close to retirement. Had knew nothing about him.
Okay.
Literally not the first thing. He's the only one that called me back out of a list of 10 dentists.
So did you interview, how did you find these dentists? You just kind of went and cold called them?
My mom being a hygienist,
okay.
I've been around
there.
All okay. those guys yeah. for a long time. I'd talked to him before I went to dental school.
Because that's always a question is how do you even approach these
sure.
or find these opportunities?
I don't think there's any shame in getting a Google map out and type in DDS and seeing who pops up.
I agree.
And cold call.
And you could cherry pick, I guess. You could see like
oh,
how old they are.
You can look at Google reviews.
Yeah.
You can Facebook
yeah.
stalk.
Yeah, you can find out a lot about that. Okay,
yeah.
Sweet. So you find this guy
yep.
and
he calls me back the same day. He's like, hey, when you're coming back to Morristown, I'd love to talk to you more. We're 2 weekends later, we're in Morristown and we're over dinner. And he's telling me about his practice and it's a very meat and potatoes. Sounded like a slam dunk. 6 ops. There's going to be plenty of room for me there.
For now.
For now. But the other dentist that kind of fell through, the one that he only had 2 ops that he worked out
yeah.
and an overflow room. That was not enough room.
No.
Now, at this point.
No.
It just kind of worked out that way. We both kind of felt, you know, like this might be it. So
right.
A few months goes by. I go to the Hinman with him in 2015, right before we graduated.
Yep.
Came to the Hinman with him, took a bunch of the dental, the dental student classes.
Gotcha.
And, you know, got to really know him more.
Which, by the way, to plug this meeting, if you're
that's
a dental student.
That's a shameless plug, but it's
great.
That's a shameless plug, but it's good.
But if you're a dental student and you haven't come to the HIMM before.
It's free.
It's free CE. It's a great experience. You get to see a ton of the stuff.
You don't get actual CE because you don't need it yet, but it's free.
You can take the classes, and then one, you get exposure to, like, gosh, the bajillion of different materials and manufacturers. So 100% a no-brainer to go to the, and I think probably the majority of these big meetings do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, side note.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we go to the HIMM, and that was in March of 2015. Pretty much at that point, I just was like, let's draw up the contract. And he wanted to, so one of my biggest frustrations with this whole practice transition was he wanted to go through a broker, a practice broker. And that was, for me, a very non-millennial thing to do. That is a very baby boomer thing. Or if you just feel very uncomfortable with talking about finances, fine. But I felt like I could do it with a lawyer and an accountant. And if I ever buy another practice, I'll never, I mean, sorry, I hope no one, you're not supported by
this.
There
are a lot of people here that are like that. Companies like that, though, unfortunately, yeah.
So frustrating. It was the most frustrating experience of my life. And it actually, if anything was left a bad flavor in my mouth about the transition, it was that.
Now,
everything else was good.
I will say, somewhat knowing your story, and we'll get into this, but I don't want to forget to make the comment, is that, you know, the flip side of that is, though, even though you had a not necessarily a great experience with a broker and a transition and that sort of thing from that side of it, what you did do was get in place a transition.
Absolutely.
And an approach to do it.
Yep.
To some degree, correct?
Yep. So one night, we'd left school, and I was meeting my wife at Huey's in Memphis, and I can remember it to this day. It was raining, and I'm on the phone negotiating a practice price.
I remember.
As a dental student.
Yeah.
And I just literally was like, I had to get off the phone. I was like, you know what? I'm going to dinner.
It's
going to dinner right now. So I
feel like that's when you're buying a car and they're like, what's it going to take for you to walk this off with a lot right now? I'm like, I don't know.
I had no clue. Thankfully, and I think there's something to be said that, you know, forming a team of people that you trust that can help you with it. If you're going to go outside of a broker or with a broker, you want a good team. So my father-in-law is actually a really great businessman. So I called him up. I was like, this is what's going on. And he was so gracious. He was, so he connected me with an accountant that he was friends with and helped me kind of come up with a price. But man, that was huge.
Sure.
Because this practice had kind of plateaued. Right. And I knew immediately that I just observed it, what I'd observed. I knew it was about to grow. And I know that I'm not trying to sound cocky about that.
No, but you saw the potential in practice.
I mean, he sat back in his office for hours, but was still making, you know.
Yeah, so, still doing well.
And so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if you actually worked.
Well, so, that's the perk of a more rural area is, you know, you don't necessarily have to compete as much.
That's true.
Which is good.
That's true. So, so I'm negotiating the price. And I think that was, I mean, if I could give any big takeaway, negotiate that price. There's industry standards out there, you know. Shoot, it's literally, they say this, you say this, and you eventually
what is it? What does it usually
all.
Be? Like somewhere 70, 90?
I've always heard 60-something%, 67-75%.
I probably pay 85-90% of collections.
I think in rural, just because it might be a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, new technology, great place. So I think that 60-90%, it's somewhat of a gambit or whatever, but anywho.
I think for me, it ended up being like 65,
which
or
would make sense
because
it's at the bottom. You know, that would make sense.
Yep.
But the reason I mentioned that is even though you had a broker, it may have been a blessing for you in hindsight, just because you were able to lay out a purchase price and a transition that laid out to you becoming an owner, right?
The word blessing is hard for me.
I know
to get
it's hard,
over.
But my point is, I see so many. I mean, look at me, for example. I mean, it's my dad that I bought the practice from. And we had nothing laid out, and so it was a cluster.
In an ideal world, the broker would act as your liaison, and this particular
company. Yeah, not like
company,
they work for the other guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This particular company says they work for both people. That is a bold-faced lie. Don't believe it. Have your own team that pay for a lawyer, pay for an accountant.
Getting your own representation,
it's
I think, is really the where it comes.
I don't care if they say it's included. get some other eyes on that contract to look at it, because I've seen, I didn't personally go through the pitfalls that we've seen, but man, how many stories have you heard?
Call all the time, yeah. And the hard part is too, is when, and I get it, when you graduate and have loans and your loans are like $6,000 a month, sure, and you got to come up with $5,000 to pay some representation, that can be a hard pill to
That's
swallow.
That's right. Oh yeah. But it's worth every penny.
But when it, yeah, when it could cost you $100,000
or more,
you know?
Yeah.
Or an out, or you know, something, it's completely worth it on that side, 100%. So I digress, but yeah, yeah, I thought that was a good point.
So I come into the practice in June. I think I showed up a couple of days, you know, before we got our license in the mail. And, you know, I started, you know, looking at what was going on in the practice, what I could do. And I'd done a lot of research. I had to differentiate myself. I had to say, what's he doing and what can I do to bring this? Yeah, so he's referring out pretty much all premolars and molar endo, you know, doing all of his anterior stuff. But you know, I saw, okay, I've done some molar endo. I mean, I'm not the greatest at endo, but I thought, you know, you look at a rural patient and you say, oh, honey, I'm going to need you to drive an hour away to Knoxville, and they're going to look at you and say, extract it, and then you're going to say, well, what if I did the root canal? And they're going to say, well, give it a whirl.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And that's the conversation that happens all the time in my office.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so I started keeping first molars.
Well, and really,
and
that's
started
even
keeping second molars.
Even that's even in, I think that's everywhere, is the reality is patients don't want to leave your practice.
So if
you can offer them, I mean, they know the, you know, Janet up front, and they know where to park. And so if you can do something, the likelihood of them, of your case acceptance goes up huge.
Oh,
we noticed that with adult ortho. When we start adding, we added that in, and then implants was the other one we noticed. And we started offering them as procedures. Even though we were referring it out the same,
sure,
the acceptance went up way more.
Absolutely. Yep. So so molar endo and premolar, premolar endo, which mostly is generally pretty easy. I say that.
I still hate upper first bicuspids.
I do too. I think we all do. So I'd started there, and then he wanted to start giving up his extraction. So anytime he'd put a force up on the tooth and it wouldn't move, he'd just say the heck with it. And I was like, go give me a handpiece. Let me section this thing. So so we started keeping a lot more of our surgical extractions at that point too. So you got the root canals, you got the extractions. And then what made our practice so unique was that the doctor I'd gone in with, he started the clinic as a denture lab, denture partial lab. That's how it started in 1980. And so what made our practice so unique is a lot of people from all over the world, not all over the world, all over East Tennessee are coming to him to make their denture, because he's always made their denture since 1980. Well, I've got a lot of edentulous mandibles with people complaining of their bottom denture not fitting. I thought, oh man, this is like, I can send you to the oral surgeon. They're going to charge you $2,000. You're going to come back to me, and I'm going to charge you a lot of money to connect that implant to your
denture. How did you learn how to do these specialty procedures? How did you learn to do implants?
So implants, it was from you.
It's from I told you.
Anyway, I was like, I'd always seen the maxi courses, but again, as an associate, I didn't have $25,000 to lay down, or $15,000 for that matter, to lay down on an implant course.
Was the owning doctor willing to help pay for the CE, or just all out of pocket for you?
Well, part of my deal was I got $1,500 a year, which, okay, you know, $1,500
doesn't
go very far. Nope, it doesn't.
Especially not implant training.
But, you know, in talking with you and another of our classmates, it was like, you got to spend money on good quality.
You got to spend money. Yeah, you do.
And it's, you're investing in yourself, and dental school can teach you great things, but it can only teach you so much.
Sure.
And 100%. So we connected, you sent me to the, referred me to the Foundry, in Birmingham, which was, an excellent course. Maybe I didn't get to place as many implants as going to the Dominican Republic or whatever, but for me, the way it was taught was such a wonderful hands-on, you know, throw you to the wolves and figure it out. And I love that. I want to figure it out.
Yeah, it's very early. And that course he's referring to at the Foundry, it's Alabama Implant Education. It's actually the course both of us taught, and we would recommend that. Other ones that I recommend all the time, Implant Pathway with Dr. Justin Moody.
Yeah.
If that had been there, I think when I was there, that probably would have been the one.
I just like his online presence.
He's the man. Shout out to you, Doc. But the and then I think Garg's course is good too. I mean, there's a lot of different sources out there, but ultimately what you have to do is spend money to make some money. So you out of pocket then.
Out of pocket.
went and
that was like my even Christmas though you're birthday an
associate and you're probably not getting you're being paid on how are you paid as an associate?
So I was paid a daily guarantee, but it was a 30% of my
collections or productions.
Hold on, production minus write off. So I did have
adjusted
to
production.
Adjusted production, yeah.
So because a common complaint I get all the time is like, well, I don't want to go pay $5,000 or $6,000 for the CE course if
and then
I'm only getting
money.
Paid 30% yeah. of the adjusted production from it.
But the counter to that is you're going to be doing so much more in associate at that point because the other doctor's not doing it. It's exactly. a no-brainer.
So to me, that's small-minded thinking because yeah. one, ultimately, hopefully, if you do have a desire to own or you're going to be in a position, you're only investing in yourself. And you're only promoting yourself to do more production, which ultimately gets you paid more. So even though you may be getting paid a percentage of it less than you would have, then get over it or go back to your dentist and try to work out some sort of deal, either that maybe that specific procedure you could get paid more or that he could pay back part of your CE with it. There's a lot of ways to do it, but that can't let be a hurdle that you because I would argue that learning to place implants and do more endo and that sort of thing, stuff that you've invested CE in has probably played out pretty handily for you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if not just, you know, it's a wonderful service to add your patients, man, seeing those patients that have had an edentulous mandible for 10 or 15 years, you throw a couple of implants in the anterior. And the shout out to the founder again, that was another, the ability to do that, teaching you surgically how to do it freehand, not with a guide.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guided surgery is wonderful.
It's great, but I think
I felt like, and so on these edentulous mandibles, it was easy. It was just a no brainer.
Kyle, so. Matt, what's up guys? We're just ahead. This is for you, Matt. These are our new shirts. So yes, I do work some, but work smarter, not harder. So I had to give them a lot. There are people watching the one. Okay. So you're going through an associate, you're placing a split, you're doing more production, yep. you're busy, it comes time to buy. When did you buy in?
So I bought in January 2nd, 2018. So I'm
I'm
a freshie. Yeah. Okay.
So let's talk about that whole transition from take me back to like November as we're preparing for it and then where we're at today.
Yeah. Okay. So looking back, I was telling you earlier, I've kind of done some introspective looking back of everything that I've done up until this point. And for me, 2.5 years as an associate worked out really well. I probably could have done it at 1.5 years and been fine. But for me, investing that time into the practice, getting those patients to know me, I mean, I feel like if anything, I've built the practice up.
Sure.
So if there is some attrition from the own people who want to see the old doctor, at this point, it's probably not going to matter.
Now, was that 2.5 years, was that in the contract when it was, or how did that date?
That was the one thing that we didn't really negotiate, and I kind of left it at, I knew that he wanted to do it sooner than later, and I wanted to do it later than sooner.
How old is he?
If he turned 71 back in November.
So you kind of had time on your side, because I would argue for most dentists coming into an associateship that have a desire to own with, say, a doctor in their 50s, it would probably be better to have some sort of a timeline laid out.
Yep.
Because
they're not going to be ready yet.
Yeah, and I see so many dentists who come in and they're like, yeah, he has a desire to let me become partner, desire me to own or percentage equity or whatever. 3 years gets by, 4 years gets by. One of our good buddies is a pediatric dentist. 3 years into an associateship, it's supposed to be partner. Nothing's getting done. He's having to walk away and start over. And so that it's not, if you don't have that, you were fortunate, obviously, because like I said, you had time on your side because he couldn't work forever. But for most people, that's something that, again, would lay out on the beginning,
yep.
you know, some sort of timeline.
But also I kind of landed in a golden egg kind of practice because he, instead of letting his practice taper off, which he didn't keep growing it, but he did let it plateau. He did at least maintain a plateau. I feel like so many guys, you know, and I feel like I'll be like this too when I get 60, 65, I'm going to probably try to start working less. You
Complacency
know?
Becomes, I think, a big issue in our profession.
But I will say this, and I think you echo this with when you came in, I feel like it recharged your dad. When I came in, I mean, he was 69, I think, 68, 69. I come in, he's a completely different person than I, you know, and even the staff was like, he's got so much more energy now. He's got all this, you know, and he wants to come to work now. It's so, it recharged him. So it was mutually beneficial.
Did you have issues before you bought it with integrating new ideas, new stuff? Because obviously that's a question we get a lot too, is how do I integrate new stuff if it's not your dad, like in my situation?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've not integrated. I've not brought in the cone beam yet. That's coming. I've not brought in, you know, scanning, digital scanning, anything like that yet. So really the things I've done are things that they were already familiar with. Now surgically placing implants with a flap laid open. That was a little hair raising for some of my assistants, but I have one assistant that was an oral surgery assistant and she was like, give me all the implant cases. And I was like, okay, sweet. So, you know, again, going back to using everybody's talents differently on your team is huge. And I mean, she's the first one to raise her hand and say, I'm doing this.
Yeah. Well, and she's excited about it too. Yep. I mean, I think that ultimately you're promoting an environment where everybody can thrive and that's good.
So about last April, maybe about this time last year, we both kind of decided, yeah. And I should have done it in January of last year, really. But in April, it's kind of like, we were both like, let's do this. So I started reaching out to accountants, lawyers, moving that forward. You know, there's just, it's a headache to transition to practice. It is one of the biggest headaches I've ever done in my life. So it really didn't get nitty gritty till like October, November. That's when I went and sought out the bank approval. Pretty easy process to get approved. I think for me, again, 2.5 years of tax data, you know, it was a no-brainer for the bank. They were going to give me the money. So, you know, some people coming straight out wanting to own a practice, you're probably going to have a hard time financing. I don't know. Maybe.
I think you could still get it. You may not get as good a rates.
And yeah. I got a great rate.
A lot of them is, it just kind of depends. I think a lot of it depends on if a practice is cash flowing, I think anybody can get the money.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I just know from, you know, I've only done this once. And so this was the, that was in November. Everything kind of went through in end of December and January 2. You know, it was so wild because it's like we worked up until Christmas. You know, everybody leaves and nobody comes back till January 2nd, really. And January 2nd, we open the door and it's like, you know, we literally physically switched places. Like he had a desk and I would sit like at
No way.
Yeah. And he, so I hopped over to the behind the desk and he, and that was his idea. And I'm kind of glad he did it.
That's a great idea, actually.
Because
mentally with his team.
If I had a video camera to show you the way he was acting on January 2nd, it was odd. It was odd for both of us because he didn't know where to. He didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, a week later, everything was fine. But, you know, I think physically changing position like that, it was huge.
I agree. I think, too, for your team, because it's almost like they get to see, wow, that's the new guy. Like, he's the boss now.
Yep.
He's
and
the
I kind of rearranged my personal office and kind of moved some things around to kind of make it, you know, my space instead of his. And so, yeah. But, you know, January 2nd, it was one of those days I was like, wow. Yeah, I'm a practice owner.
So it was a total buyout, but he's staying on as associate?
Yep, total buyout. He wanted his work. And I've literally told him, I love having him around because for me, dentures and partials, and I didn't like doing dentures and partials when we graduated. I hated them. And now I love them. It's one of my favorite things to do because inevitably, with my lower dentures, I'm throwing in 2 implants.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really want to do this without 2 implants. And who would? I wouldn't.
I think I sent someone away the other day. I was like, I'm not going to do it. I was like, I can't make you something you're going to be happy with.
Yeah.
Because I'm not as good at making dentures.
Well, I just sat
so I was like, you're either getting implants or you're going to have to go somewhere else.
Sure. I just sat in a locator class this morning and she literally said, she was like, locator dentures are the standard of care now. I was like,
I kind of agree.
I mean, I agree too. I wouldn't want that in my mouth. I would not want to flop a horseshoe.
I wish the insurance companies would agree with this.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay, so that the change happens.
Sure.
And then
what else do you want to know?
Well, tell us, what's that experience been like? Is life different? Is it harder? What's harder?
Yeah.
What's easier?
Yeah.
I mean, now the problem is now you've been there for 2.5 years,
yep,
building up ideas of what you want your practice to be like. Now you get the chance to do them.
Yep.
What's happening?
So the first week, you know.
First off, are you making more money?
Well, I didn't pay myself till February.
Well, that's
and even my staff was like, it's time to pay yourself.
That's hysterical. You need to take some money.
You need to take some money off. So yes, it's going to work out hugely in my favor, probably double.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
The first year, you know.
Wow. And that's awesome.
That's notes paid.
Congratulations.
That's everything. So for me, you know, it's like, I did not want to be an associate for the rest of my life. I And I'm the kind of personality, I don't really like working for anybody either. And I'll take all the ownership, whatever, give it to me. I'll take ownership of whatever I do. I didn't want that looming over me for the rest of my life. So the first week I'm sitting there, the first day goes by like so smoothly because no bills to pay. You know, it's, I'm just sitting there. We're doing dentistry.
And do y'all have an office manager or are you the office manager?
So yes, that was one thing I did. I kind of changed some of the roles, the de facto office manager. I just straight up said, hey, you're the office manager and I'm giving you, I gave everybody a little raise to kind of show them commitment to them.
Yeah, cool.
I had to make some staff changes, which was very hard. That's
I want to talk about that. Hard. So come back to that.
So, you know, the first week though, you know, I was just sitting there thinking, man, you know, I'm the owner. The first week goes off without a hitch. Second week, that's when all the crap started. So
what happened?
So you're switching over all your insurances.
Oh gosh,
me as the sole provider,
the and MPI him as a, and
yeah,
stuff.
And so the MPI numbers and all of this.
You stop getting paid.
You literally stop getting paid.
We didn't think about that either. When we did.
The money actually is still coming in, and I did buy the accounts receivable at a discounted rate. The money's still coming in, but it ain't yours.
No, yeah.
And I took ownership of that money because I paid for it. So I had a little cash. It's a good way to get a little cash flow. That's a good way to do that. But the money that you're making on January 2,
it's all
I didn't get paid.
Hung up in insurance. Yeah.
It was probably middle of February before I started getting that. So you got to build that into your practice transition.
And that was something that I did not think about. We did not think about at all. And I did the same thing. I bought the accounts receivable for whatever rate we agreed to.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, that was a very eye-opening It was like, wait a second, and then it all hit, and we had a good couple months.
Sure, yeah. So after that's when the hard stuff started happening. You know, my front office is dealing with a new accountant. You know, so there's all of that transition. How do we do this? How do we do that? How do we do? You know, my poor office manager was on the phone hours a day with insurance agencies trying to get us turned over to, you know, all. So you know, I feel like by the end of February, maybe the 1st of March, that's when I finally got to the point where I felt like, okay, we got it going here. So, yeah.
Okay. So talk about transitioning team. You said you had turnover.
Yeah, we had a little turnover. So about last year.
Did you see this coming before you were an owner or only after?
Man. Yeah.
Okay. You knew. Ask.
Yeah. I saw it coming from very, very
early on. And
what
was it? Just
I'll tell you the thing that kind of. Why don't I just tell you the thing that was the nail in the coffin for me? I printed a past due pro fee report where there were probably 600 or 700 names on it, and we were having cancellations in hygiene, and it was just a mess.
So this was someone in the front office.
Yeah, it was front office. Yeah.
So basically, here's an opportunity to. Here is a list of 700 patients you could call to schedule people. Yet I continue to see that our books aren't filled.
Yep. And as an associate, I felt like I just had no authority to talk about, you know, what needed to be done in the office. And so I tried to encourage it. And then just by the end of it, it just seemed like it wasn't going to work out. And so, you know, had to do a little turnover, had to help out, I felt like I needed to make a commitment to the rest of the team. So that's why I offered them just a small raise just to say, hey, thanks for being with me and let's do great dentistry together.
Did you start looking into the numbers like that as an associate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, you and I have talked.
I knew the answer to that a little bit.
I wanted to know the numbers from the get-go, that was one of the things going into this. So many dentists don't know their own numbers. It's kind of like, I wanted to know. I was like, I want to know. So we started out, in 3 years, we've grown the practice by 25 to 30%. Just been awesome growth. And so I can't complain. But I wouldn't have known that if I wasn't looking at the numbers from the beginning. So I think as an associate, if you have access to the numbers, you got to get them.
So here's a little bit of thought. You know, we talk a lot here about ownership and what it's been to you and that sort of thing. What would you say to the person that's like, well, I just don't want to own, or, you know, because my concern always is that it's like, that's fine if you don't want to own, but then what is your other options? Does that really hurt you financially? And is there a way that you can be an owner and develop a team around you where you're an owner, but you're not the one running the practice? Because it sounds like you're doing a lot of the roles versus like you could be delegating Or a better question for you, talk to me about how much business or office management stuff you're doing on a day-to-day basis versus the normal dentistry that you were just doing as an associate. Like, talk about how your roles changed from associate to owner.
Sure. As associate, I was showing up. I mean, I'd literally show up 5 minutes before the bell.
You're a typical millennial.
Yep.
Come on.
Yep. I mean, and sometimes 8:01, 8:02. But I also stayed when I had to stay,
okay,
too. And so, you know, now it's so much easier to show up a little earlier to get things done.
Right.
I take on probably a lot of more responsibility than I should. But, you know, I've automated payroll. I've automated all the accounting stuff where I just can be hands off. The question was about being...
The differences in the roles between an associateship and owner now, like on your day-to-day basis.
For me, it doesn't seem like too much of a difference. I mean, yeah, I worry about the cash flow. I worry about what's
sure.
going on. But, and now I have a financial stake in the cash flow. But for me, you know, it's not been too much of a difference.
Talk about the team that you brought in then. Did you get an accountant?
Yep.
Attorneys, I mean, do you have a financial planner? Do you have an office? I mean, you said you kind of have an office manager. Who's ordering supplies? Who's
yep.
tracking that?
Yep.
Talk about that, your team kind
so
of aspect.
I feel like my team, my staff is probably my favorite thing about my office because three of them have been there for longer than 15 years. Two of those have been there for longer than 25 years. My one assistant that's been there for 28 years, she orders all the supplies. My office manager does all the insurance, all that. We operate with a pretty small staff. I would say some people probably tell me I need more staff. Some people would say you're doing just fine with the staff you've got. They work hard. And I think staff is so crucial to your success as a dentist. And I think that you as a dentist need to honor that too, because it's 100%. Make or break. It's,
and that's what, I feel like I'm trying to get my team right now. I'm really trying to figure out what is a payroll. And we're doing a kind of a profit sharing plan now yep. in our practice where I'm trying to, I mean, look, my goal, and I talk about this all the time, being lazy, I really do want to work smarter, not harder.
Yeah,
I want to take more vacations. I don't want to work my butt off. I want to do the type of dentistry I want to do.
Yep.
And so the only way I can do that is if my team is completely on board with my vision. And if they don't know that from the get-go and I don't reward them in a way that everyone benefits, then they're just not going to have that kind of result. And so it really has to affect your team in a dramatic way.
Absolutely.
And doing that, I feel like you have to make your message clear. So that is another question I wanted to ask you.
Yep.
What have you done to, have you outlaid your vision to your team of kind of what you want the practice to be?
So, you know, I was telling you, we're kind of at the point where I'm kind of struggling with some things. And one of the things is where this practice was so hands-off, now I'm having to be hands-on.
Right.
And I want to be hands-on.
Sure.
And I told him, from the get-go, I said, I'm more hands-on than this guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just way more
hands-on. That's
okay. And so I was upfront about that in the beginning. And so, you know, I told him that. And then as far as, man, I've lost my train of thought. We were going with the vision.
Okay. The vision.
So that's where I'm kind of
especially
struggling.
As now you get to the point where you're wanting to integrate technology
yep.
and you're changing the way you've been doing things
yep.
a lot more than you have.
My office had zero protocols, zero
no systems,
no
probably
systems,
no consent forms.
No consent forms. That you know, I introduced a consent form the first time and they're like, really? You have to do yeah.
You're like, oh, I was blown. I was like, but dad, you're doing like some crazy stuff and you're not getting consent form.
No, that. I know. So that's what that's where I'm at right now. So we've got a good team, but it's almost like we need to have, we've got to unify the team and be all on the same page. I feel like we've all and that's just because for 40 years, it was a very just hands-off practice. He let the hygiene do what they want. And that's a great, you know, that's great for the hygienist. But for me, you know, I don't want to deal with the questions every day. Well, what do we do in this situation? No,
yeah.
no, just do it. Cause that's what I
yeah.
do. I just go do it, you know? So I want it to be more automated when it comes to, that's where we're at. That's
so,
a struggle.
So let me tell you
right
one thing
now.
We're doing, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
We're actually bringing in a consultant, his name is Dr. Benjamin Nimick, and
okay.
He's a good buddy of mine, actually. And one of the things he's having us do before he comes in is Dad and I have to write out our ideal day.
Okay.
Very pretty detailed. It was pretty funny. I sent Dad mine, and mine's like 5 pages long. And Dad was like, I was going to write like a paragraph, like do implants in the morning, do wisdom teeth in the afternoon. And that was my ideal day. And mine's like, you know, what every single employee is doing, how it would go, what morning huddle looks like,
yeah.
when we end, when we're done, how we break, how they talk to patients, you know, everything. And then he wants us to write out our vision. Basically,
okay.
what do we want the vision for the practice to be? What do we aspire to be? And gosh, so doing the exercise just myself has been very eye-opening.
Sure.
And what I think it's going to be great is, and for my team, is that it's really going to lay out a clear picture of what I expect and what they want.
Sure.
Because if not, it's just, well, I guess Sully doesn't want to work and he wants to place implants and I don't really know what my role in this is.
Right.
But I have to, like, I got to start getting my hygiene department to realize that, like, the actual prophy part of the hygiene is like a very small portion of like of my consideration from a business owner standpoint and a practice standpoint. Like, is that important? Do I care about the oral health of the patient? 100% yes. But I also need them to see the big picture. And if I don't make that clear to them, it's hard. So I would totally encourage you to do that exercise.
Yeah.
I think it, and then I have to, and then I'm going to read it aloud to them.
Yeah.
And give it to them.
You know, even down to like how we schedule, we have added, you know, little pieces of staff and everybody schedules in my office, which is kind of a little bit annoying, but I like it because it's, you know, I want everyone to be on the same page about the schedule, but that's one thing. Well, how do I schedule for that? You know, that's another thing to battle. And so that's stuff that we're working through right now. And, you know, me as a millennial dentist, I don't want to deal with
it. No, I get you.
But it has to be dealt with and it's got to be dealt with. So yeah, that's number one struggle.
Probably. Talk about, now that as an owner of technology, I mean, I know you're like me. I know that all of us young dentists want to have technology. How are you deciding on what technology to invest in and what's kind of next for you as far as that goes?
Yep. So Combeam is probably number one on my short list. It's just my wallet doesn't have $100,000.
Yeah, I know.
But I really want a Combeam because of all the root canals I'm doing. And I mean, I'm a surgery nut. If I could just do surgery, extractions, and implants, I would do it. I would do it in a heartbeat. There's a little piece of me that was like, maybe you should have gone to oral surgery. Well, I was middle of the class. You know, I was.
So tell me what you told me earlier, because I thought that was, we had a discussion off topic earlier. Sure. I'd like to rehash because I thought it was a really good point. But about how you were talking about technology and wanting to possibly get into aligners and that stuff. Maybe the next thing I'll buy is a printer because you want to do aligners.
So I guess it's more like access to entry is, you know, it seems like the intraoral camera of everything is probably the cheapest to kind of wrap your head around.
Right.
Not cheap, but cheap to wrap your head around. It's not a $100,000 hit. So for me, you naturally as a new owner,
you want to go to the lower cost,
go the lowest possible cost of entry. Okay, well, I'll just start doing crowns with a scanner
or whatever.
Oh, and I could do maybe some aligners with that, and maybe, but I can't print surgical guides if I don't have a Combeam.
No.
So it's kind of like.
And my point to you was over there, and I'll kind of rehash to our listeners a little bit, is that my thing was, When you hear you talk, okay, you tell me, I thought maybe I should have gone to oral surgery school. I love placing implants. I'm in small town, blah, 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 blah. Then I would tell you, why aren't you building and buying and investing in quicker, sooner rather than later, the things that make the practice the way you want it to be? Right. Because what you're telling me is, okay, well, I'm going to invest in something because it almost seems like a lot of people are doing it. It's a lower cost of entry. It provides another service. But I don't know if I really love it or if I really will enjoy doing it other than just maybe I should do it. And so to me, yes, 100% one is a way higher entry point. One is a way lower entry point. But if you love something and you want to do more of it and you go buy the Combeam and spend the extra money, okay, I mean, that's an extra like $2,000 to $3,000 a month, okay, then now you're getting to do more of what you love. So one, you're going to enjoy dentistry more, okay, because just trust me, what I've had the fortunate ability to, and we kind of talked about this, spending money on stupid stuff just to try it and not having to have it work just because we're a bigger practice. And I found that the things that I spend money on that are successful and have good ROI are usually the things I enjoy doing. And so, yeah, some people may love doing aligner therapy and that may be the case, but if you're telling me I love surgery stuff, then gosh, I would be putting every daggum dollar I have into doing that. Because in a small town, especially, you have the opportunity to be doing, you know,
sure,
a couple hundred implants a year.
Well, and at this point too, the Foundry was a great course and it's a really good entry course. And you know, you're laying these huge flaps and that's great. But I've gotten into some situations where I got in there and I thought that does not look like what I thought it was going to look like.
Because you're going off a pan.
And you're going, And you know, you're just measuring with bone gauges. And
that's
stuff.
Terrifying. I'm impressed actually that you place as many as you have doing it that way because that's terrifying.
Yeah. But for me, it's kind of, you know, it's fun.
Fun. Being,
it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, I would sleep so much better at night. And so, yeah, I'm, I Cone Beam is it's got to be one of my it's the top of my short list of things I need. So for me this is kind of some transparency here. I'm at the point where I'm with a baby boomer dentist who thinks that a closed off system is just the stupidest thing that you could ever do. But I'm sitting here as a millennials and as a iPhone in my pocket and a MacBook in my backpack and an iPad.
You like an integrated system.
I like an integrated system. And so, it's like you as a brand new associate or owner, you're going to get a lot of voices telling you all the different things. At the end of the day, you got to make the decision. And I'm preaching to myself right now. At the end of the day, I've got to make the decision that's going to be best for me and the best for my practice. Going all in on one system, it's hard. It's going to be hard to stomach that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look, at the end of the day, regardless of systems or things you use or whatever it is, it's not going to be black and white for every person.
Nope, it's not.
And the problem is even the way I talk and the way our podcast goes a lot of time, it's not going to be for every listener.
Sure.
Because the reality is that the people I want to reach are the ones that have a desire to excel beyond what just general dentistry is.
Sure.
Or, and so at some point there's going to be a level of dentistry. It's like, okay, well, that's fine if we're not connecting like that.
Sure.
Because we just may not.
Right.
Because ultimately I don't have any desire to do that, which you enjoy, but that's cool. But that's why there's tons of podcasts, where there's tons of companies. And so
at the end of the day,
it's finding what you like.
Yep.
But then my thing is find it and then run
it.
And
be passionate about
it. Yeah, run into
it.
Because if you will do that, success will follow, money will follow. And so that's why I tell people if don't just buy something because it's the cheapest.
Yeah.
Buy it because you believe in it. And so if something is you do have no desire, and then be open minded. Listen to all different opinions because you get on groups and that sort of thing, and Dental Hacks is a phenomenal resource. But sometimes the loudest voices are the negative voices. And so you do have to kind of wade through a lot of that to figure out what you like and what you don't like and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Negativity will just kill you. But absolutely being passionate about what you do, man, when a patient perceives that, it's like, I live for that. It's like a high. When a patient gets excited off of something you're excited about
And it follows. I mean, you doing what you love to do, them doing it, it's a dots flow. So
everybody's happy.
Go look at some cone beams while you're here.
Because
for you, knowing what you want to do, that's a no-brainer.
Sure.
Jump into the pool. Jump in the pool with me. I'm telling you, the water's fine.
How long have you been trying to get me to jump into this pool?
A cone beam probably for a while. But let's look back. Was getting into implants a bad idea?
No, it was the best thing I've ever done.
And you will come back and tell me at some point when you buy the cone beam that was the best decision you ever made.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you will. So you might as well take the plunge, do it, get
everybody. But see, as a millennial, I like to spend my money on trips to Big Sky, Montana.
I know. It's true. good food, wine.
Yeah, that's right. And so, it is an for me, and maybe I'm more of anti-millennial when it comes to the way I spend my money. When you see something that big, I've never dealt with numbers this big in my life
until I was
a practice owner. And so to see that, it's very emotional for me, and I get very gridlocked when it comes down to that. But
my thing with any of that though is just like we buy cars, you got to look at the monthly payment.
Yep.
You got to figure out what you got to do to make that payment every month.
Sure.
And that's regardless of any piece of technology, whether it's chairs, equipment,
and your car might be $300 or $500.
Yeah, none of us have problems buying, expensive cars.
Because it gets you to your job where you make money.
Yeah. If it's a $100,000 cone beam and you get a $25,000 write-off, so then, $75,000, it's a good deal. So, all right. Dude, this has been a blast.
Dude, absolutely.
We were going to do this again. Paymon, where are you, bro? Get here. He got tied up in Nashville with two dadgum emergencies, so he's coming. In the meantime, though, I think I'm going to bring in Dr. Tyler over here to help co-host some of the rest of these
guest co-hosts.
I think you do great. It's fun. So thanks for tuning in, Dental Hacks Nation, and we will be back for more Work Smarter, Not Harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.